AM.
Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everyone. Welcome to the show today. Based on his extensive research, today's guest says that consumers, that means you and me, are paying on average $946 a year in hidden fees. I'm going to say that again. We're paying on average $946 a year in hidden fees. Money that you could put towards a family vacation, towards retirement fund, to college tuition. And my guest is going to tell us what to look for and how to avoid losing our hard-earned money on what he calls sneak fees. He is Bob Sullivan, author and technology writer for MSNBC, with a focus on technology crime and consumer fraud. As the nation's leading journalist covering identity fraud, he's written more than 100 articles on the subject. His work appears on several MSNBC partner sites, including MSN.com, Wall Street Journal Interactive, and ZDNet.com. Bob Sullivan also appears on air on MSNBC, CNBC, NBC Nightly News, and The Today Show. He's the winner of the prestigious 2002 Society of Professional Journalists Public Service Award for his series of articles on online fraud. And he's the author of the popular MSNBC blog, The Red Tape Chronicles. You're going to want to check that out. And he's joining us today to share his latest work. His book is called Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. Bob Sullivan, so glad to have you on the show today.
Hi, happy to be here.
Well, I was saying before we started the show what an eye-opener this book was for somebody who, like me, who'd spent many years in banking, in financial industry. As a senior manager, I thought I knew every trick in the book, and I'm reading through your book and gasping out loud at some of the practices that so-called reputable companies are practicing. And I wanted to start out by reading a section that you have at the back of the book under the acknowledgements. You say, "I'm sorry, I had to write this book. It was a pain to write. I don't really like reading small print. It's more of a compulsion. And I really don't like confrontation much either. I'm actually kind of shy." So, Bob, why did you write this book? Why was it necessary?
Well, you know, it was necessary because there's just so much of this going on. 2 years ago, I started this blog called The Red Tape Chronicles, and I started out just to write about the frustrations that Hurricane Katrina survivors were facing trying to get through FEMA paperwork and whatnot, and some of it had to do with what was happening to their credit reports. And every time I wrote one of these stories about credit card troubles or cell phone troubles, I would just get overwhelmed with response from readers. Thousands of people would write to me over the course of a day or two saying, "You won't believe what my cell phone company just did to me. Can you help me?" And the ire that's sort of out there simmering over the subject is tremendous. And so I really wanted to look into what was going on. And the truth is, once I started to look carefully at all of these industries, you just see this stuff everywhere. And not only does it hurt us every day in our wallets, I think it's changing the way our country works. And it really does bother me. And so I'm hoping to maybe tap into some of that frustration and turn it into something that can equal change.
Yeah, and if we're to avoid sneak fees, we need to know our enemy, as you call them. And I wish you were talking about a small handful of slick-backed head salesmen that we think of as being con men, but you're not. You're talking about major companies like AT&T and Sprint and MCI, and I wonder if you'd share with us something that you call reverse competition, and how that works.
Sure.
First of all.
Well, first of all, everything that you are now kind of used to dealing with when you go into a car dealership, on the side of the highway, and you get that high-pressure tactic and all the lies and misleading characterizations, I mean, those strategies are now used by every kind of company and every kind of industry, so that's what you have to steel yourself for as a consumer. And it's not only individual salespeople who are trying to do bait-and-switch things to you. Some of it is very institutionalized, and so there's new terms in the industry, like mouse print, which most folks haven't ever heard of, but that would be fine print that's so small, you know, that really it's big enough only for a mouse to read it, and they call it mouse print. And you know, from what I understand, I mean, they actually do sit in these dark rooms and chuckle when they come up with these techniques for tricking us out of money. So mouse print is one of them. There's something called shrouding, which is just a technique for hiding the true price of things, and perhaps we can talk about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And reverse competition might be the most insidious of all, and it's a little complicated to explain, but basically, the normal competitive forces in the market economy and capitalism, there are several companies trying to sell something, and they compete against each other, and so competition drives the price down. But in a different kind of transaction, which I can explain momentarily, the forces work in reverse and actually drive the price up. So the classic example would be something like title insurance on a house. And the reason is when a consumer is buying title insurance, you're almost always buying it, if not directly through an agent, you're buying it at the suggestion of an agent. And that agent, through a couple of other arrangements, and that agent's company is actually profiting off of the title insurance that you get. So title insurance companies will not necessarily negotiate directly with you, but they're really negotiating with the agents in order to get access to you. And the way that they convince the agent to recommend them is by upping the agent's fee, which obviously ups your fee. So that's reverse competition. Instead of price going down, the price is going up.
Okay. And let's talk about shrouding as well. You just mentioned that term, shrouding. What do we mean
sure.
by shrouding?
Shrouding you see everywhere. And let me give you the classic example of shrouding. I'll bet the last time that you went out to an electronics store and bought a printer, you thought you got a really great deal. You can believe that printer, which prints, you know, 20 pages a minute, color photos and all that, was only $49. What a great deal.
You say in the book they're practically free these days.
Yeah, they really are free. It's kind of like the old trick with razors, you know. But you know, 3 days after you printed a couple of pages and you ran out of ink and you had to go back to the store to find the ink, now you realize what's going on. But it would be one thing if, you know, it was just a little bit of a loss leader to give you the printer to hook you into the ink. But the problem is, most ink cartridges don't even say how big they are, and they certainly don't say in any way how many pages you can print with them. So therefore, there is literally no way to know how much that printer is going to cost you in the first month, the first 6 months, the first 12 months. And not only is this frustrating, but again, look at what we've done. There is no intelligent way for a consumer to buy a computer printer today, because there's no way for you to comparison shop. Advantage company. Consumers are basically helpless in that situation. That's shrouding.
Okay. Well, yeah, it is. I just brought a new printer myself and went through that very same thing. It's like, you know, you can't compare apples with apples. And I want to talk about something you call, well, first of all, you mentioned this in the beginning, that it's actually affecting the very the American economy as we know it. How so?
It's affecting in lots of ways. For one, there's something called stealth inflation as a result of hidden fees. When companies report their data to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and it computes inflation, oftentimes these surcharges and fees are not included in the data. And so there's a really serious problem with that. I mean, we've been living in this era really since the Greenspan time. Record low inflation in the U.S. And you know, year after year, we hear about these inflation numbers that are you know, hardly even a speck on a blip on a chart. And yet everybody seems to feel squeezed all the time. One reason for that is that there's all this inflation and hidden fees that's totally missed by the statisticians in the federal government. So stealth inflation is a really big problem. But I think even more fundamentally, let me define this by example. When the market economy is failing in this way, when consumers cannot intelligently shop for things and therefore, you know, the best companies aren't winning. They aren't competing by using new products, low prices, better employees. Instead, they're competing by cheating. I know the companies that win are the ones that hide their prices the best, the ones that shroud the best. And the end result of that is products that aren't good, customer service that stinks, and consumers that are really frustrated. And the example I would give for this quite clearly is cell phone service.
Mm-hmm.
Most consumers are locked up in these long-term contracts, which give them no leverage when they have a customer service problem. So what are you going to do? Quit the company? It's going to cost you $200. And as a result, what is the incentive for a cell phone company to improve its service? There isn't any. That's a failure of a market economy.
Mm. And again, if you're shopping for a cell phone in particular, it's something else. It's very hard to comparison shop because I just went through the same thing again myself. I ended up deciding to just stick with my original one because it was so confusing.
And exactly. I mean, all of this is designed to create a fog around you as a consumer because confused consumers are much more profitable consumers.
Right. And you talk about, talking about shrouding, you gave an example of, in some of the material I had from you, of the Holiday Inn, which years ago decided to disclose all fees, all taxes, all surcharges up front and quota in the price. And they started losing business to other hotels who didn't do that when people were comparison shopping.
And isn't this a tragedy? And again, I would call this a failure of the market, and really a failure of the government to create a fair market. Holiday Inn is just one example of this. I've talked to many other companies that would feel this way, would say this, but they wouldn't dare say it publicly. You can't afford to be fair right now. You can't afford to publish the actual price of something because all your competitors are engaged in bait and switch. And if you're not, you know, you can't be the only one being honest at the poker table. That's foolish. So right now, the way things are set up, companies that would love for someone to come in and say, all right, everyone play fair, here's the rules, they just can't afford to do that. And again, you know, I'm not here saying that all consumers are good and honest and all companies are bad and evil.
Sure.
But I am pointing out that the system, as it has evolved right now, is badly broken.
Yeah, and probably like most people, I was under the misconception that there was a government agency monitoring all this. I know certainly when I worked in the financial industry, we were governed by regulatory compliance, which apparently has gone out of the window. So there's no one particular agency, you say, governing any of this sneak fee practice?
Well, there are government agencies that watch over all of these industries. The problem is they're wildly underfunded, and in many cases, they've been cut by half. We all kind of looked on in horror this year when the Consumer Product Safety Commission suddenly got the attention of journalists, and we found out that there is, according to the New York Times, only one inspector for all foreign toys that enter the U.S. One person.
Mm.
That's it. A little bit more broad example, the Federal Trade Commission is the agency that's most charged with keeping us safe. Banks are regulated by a series of other regulators, but most industries are governed by the Federal Trade Commission. And in 1979, it had 1,700 full-time employees whose job it was to keep us safe and to provide somewhere for us to go if we were frustrated by something, false advertising, all those kinds of things. Today, after two decades have passed and we have the Federal Trade Commission is now responsible for a much larger field of subjects like the Internet, like the Do Not Call list, like spam, like identity theft. They have a much bigger job now. And today they have just about 1,000 full-time employees, went from 1,700 to 1,000 over that span of time, just about half. So that's all we have now to protect us. So, and there are very good people working very hard in that agency, but there's just not enough of them.
Yeah. I want to talk about something you talk about in the very first chapter, and not to pick on AT&T, but this was an AT&T example, and they did what they called a qualitative study. I wonder if you'd share some information on that and insight and how it impacted us as consumers.
Sure. I think that just about everybody has gotten some kind of a mailer at home, lots of them, where the print is really small and it's 16 pages and it's printed on tissue paper and you don't know what it says, so you just throw it out. And if you think maybe those things are designed purposefully so that you won't read them, you're right. They are. And that AT&T study that you referenced, you know, most of the time when people make these accusations, it's sort of anecdotal, but there was actually a court case where it was revealed that AT&T had done market research when they were sending home a mailing that had legal implications to all of its customers. They had researched exactly what would make their customers simply throw the letter out without even opening it. How do they design the envelope so it gets thrown out? Those who did open it, how do they word the first paragraph so that people would not read further? The conclusion, by the way, was they put at the top in very bold letters, "You do not have to do anything to keep your service." Mm-hmm. So that would get people, "Oh, I don't have to do anything. Great, I'm busy. I'm going to throw it out."
Right.
And then underneath, there were all sorts of other stipulations that really affected consumers. So they did that specifically so that people wouldn't read the notice. And by not doing anything, by silence, it meant consent for what AT&T was asking.
Yeah, and that's that happens a lot with credit card companies. I've noticed they'll send out statement of terms, and you think it's just, you know, something they send out on an annual basis. But then, as I found out once to my detriment, I did not act. I did not call them and tell them not to do something. And so my rate subsequently went up.
No, people tell me this all the time. How crazy is that? They send a letter home, and I'm just going to guess, your interest rate went from 10% 20%, something along those lines.
Yep.
Oh, boy. Yep. So they send a letter and they say, we're going to raise your interest rate unless you object, and if you object, please call us. So obviously, 100% of the recipients of that letter, if they knew what it meant, would call.
Right.
But since so few people call, there's another big element of my proof that these letters are designed so that consumers will be confused and will act. I mean, what a crazy situation.
Yeah. And you know, my thinking, because working in the financial industry, we would have to send disclosures out every year, whether they changed or not. I thought it was just that standard, you know, oh, it's my once a year change notice thing. But
right.
As you said, my rate went up considerably because the company had changed. I also want to talk about floating prices, but let's take a break first and we'll talk about that when we come back. And we'll also look at some of the industries that are the number one complaints amongst consumers in general and how we can deal with those hidden fees. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest today is Bob Sullivan. His book, Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show at its new time, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hi, this is Howard Bono.
And I'm Gary Manns.
And we are the co-hosts for The Money Thing. Gary, we're moving times, aren't we?
January 8th, that's Tuesday, January 8th at noon, right after the Dr. Pat Show, The Money Thing with Howard Bono and Gary Manns is coming your way. Brand new time for a brand new year.
Can't wait. That's Tuesdays at noon right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 KKNW.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back. Thank you for being with us today. If you don't have a pen and pad handy, you might want to grab one and take some information down, because we're talking today with Bob Sullivan. He's an award-winning journalist, and his latest book is called Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. And I wanted to talk, Bob, a little about floating prices and what we call, I think it was called preferential pricing. I just can't find the word I'm looking for right now. But you gave an example of where Amazon did a study based on databases and what people had bought before. Like, let's say I had bought books on writing, for example. And if they saw I was looking for a book on writing, they'd charge me a higher price than somebody maybe who'd never bought a book on writing before. Do you remember that study?
Yes, yeah. Amazon ran this experiment about 2 years ago, and they backed off of it fairly quickly because bloggers figured out what was going on and started to, you know, really protest. But it will come back, I promise. One of the main premises of my book is the death of the price tag. And the simplest example for people is when you walk in a grocery store now, there are no price tags on groceries anymore. They're underneath the shelf, and hopefully they're the right price for the jar of spaghetti sauce you're looking at, but often they're not, and certainly by the time you get to the checkout counter, you have no idea how much things cost in your cart, and that creates all sorts of problems. That exists all over the place. When you go buy a cell phone, there's a big sticker on the storefront window that says $39.99 a month. No one pays $39.99 a month. Those prices are all misleading. So the whole nature of putting a price tag on something has changed. And the idea of floating pricing is certainly very intriguing to companies, and it should scare the heck out of consumers. Because a company like Amazon can watch what you buy. They'll know that you're a big Harry Potter fan. And they'll not only recommend to you that there's a new Harry Potter book coming out, but they'll charge you a higher price because you personally are more drawn to pay it and are probably more willing to pay it as a fan than would someone who wasn't necessarily a fan. So they would charge a discount price to someone who wasn't likely to buy it. So the more you like something, the more that you'll pay. Mm. And this is another premise of my book, that there are these sophisticated databases that are tracking everything we do, particularly at grocery stores, for example. And as a result of that, we are getting charged hidden fees that go above and beyond $2 or $3 extra that something might cost us today. But when all this information is tracked on us, it's going to cost us a lot of money in the future, and it's going to cost us in ways, cost us loss of privacy in ways that we can't even imagine now, although I can certainly, if you like, I can conjure up a few pretty unimaginable scenarios for you as to why these databases are really frightening. Well, here's one that's already happening in grocery stores. Divorce lawyers have made subpoenaing grocery records a standard operating procedure in custody cases. So if an ex-wife wants to prove that a future ex-husband is not really a worthwhile dad, they'll look up his grocery records and say, look at all this junk food he's buying. He's not treating my son that well. Judge, give me custody. That happens all the time today.
Oh my gosh.
Just one unforeseen consequence. I mean, when you fill out the little form and you get your 50 cents off at the grocery store, you're in no way thinking about what might happen in a future divorce case as you're going through, but that is the kind of thing that's happening. So that's another kind of hidden fee that's much more severe than dollars and cents.
Mm. And just a little off topic there, but somewhat related. I remember seeing a Frontline documentary, and this should scare anybody enough, that Karl Rove used those very same databases in the last Bush election, and they would specifically they could target cat owners, they could target dog owners.
Yeah, this is micro-targeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big part of this election going on right now, too. For states that haven't had primaries yet, they haven't experienced it, but letters and emails that you're going to get are going to be incredibly specific. And, maybe you like that if you like the candidate. But as people often mention, you might very much like whatever party you are a member of, you might very much like today's top Democrat. And you don't mind them having all this information about you. But what about someone you don't trust 4, 8, 12 years from now? There's no way to get that information back.
Mm. And that's really scary. That's the first time I've heard about the divorce situation and those kind of records being subpoenaed to use.
Anything that's
someone
in a database can be obtained by a government agency and almost always can be obtained by a lawyer with a subpoena.
So what's the solution? We pay cash for everything, right? And then they don't know.
Well, I'll give you one solution to those loyalty cards. I love this one. My friends who are privacy advocates have what are called loyalty card parties where, every few weeks, over a couple of beers, they'll take out all their supermarket cards and throw them on the table and then grab someone else's. So they still get the discounts, but it's no longer tracking them.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. Let's take a look at the primary industries that really tick people off, that people have a lot of problems with. You know, we tend to think it's just us and we've run into bad luck. But you say it's pretty clear that what most people are upset about, number one is banks, cell phone companies, credit cards, travel, and pay TV in that order.
Yep.
And go ahead.
Well, you should know this. Everyone hates banks.
I know. That's why I had to leave. Yeah. I couldn't stand the stress of being yelled at.
Well, it's very funny business, really, because access to credit is incredibly important, and everyone, it's fair to pay a price for access to credit, of course. But there are banks now that make more money off of fees than they do off of interest income,
and so that
turns the whole business model upside down.
It does, and I read in the book that they actually hire fee consultants to conjure up ways of, how can we instigate more fees. And I actually remember being on a task force committee for that very, very subject.
Oh, and what did you do?
Well, actually, at that time, I worked for a credit union, and members really do have a lot of say in credit unions versus mm-hmm. banks. And so we did instigate a fee. Members hit the roof, and so the fee was removed.
Well, how about that? You know, that is an important point. People often tell me who belong to credit unions that they're very, very happy with it. And, you know, certainly people who work bank at smaller banks feel a little bit more... you know, there's a little bit more human treatment when they go to those places. Credit unions, just right off the top of my head, credit unions save people a lot on ATM fees, for example, because a lot of them will not only allow you to withdraw money from any ATM, but they'll also rebate other banks' ATM fees. And the average consumer pays about $100 a year just in those ATM fees, so that adds up.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. So let's look at credit cards, because this is really my number one pet peeve. And again, Frontline did an excellent documentary on credit cards and the astronomical rates that they charge. Let's look at some of the tactics they use to get you to use their credit card, and then what can happen if we miss a payment or are a little late on a payment.
Or even you're perfectly on time with the payment, but the credit card company has simply moved up the due date a couple of days, so they've made you late.
Now, how can that how can that be legal?
It may or may not be legal, but the truth is everything in our country is legal until someone is hauled before a judge.
Mm. And I guess it's they send out that little statement of terms to say the due date's been changed, and that's the one we toss in the trash and don't look at, right?
Right, right. I mean, there's a grace period, and people think of the grace period as between 30 and 45 days, but when they shrink the grace period to 22 days, and they send you a note home, you know, they can do whatever they want.
Mm. And there's no restriction on how much they can up that rate, is there?
No. You know, there used to be usury laws, and I have in the book the sad, sad story of what happened in our country when basically the Supreme Court allowed banks to have, to essentially locate themselves in any state in the country that they wished and follow only the rules, the banking rules of that state. So that's why, if you're curious, why all your credit cards are based either in South Dakota or Delaware, where the state where the interest rate laws are very, very favorable to credit cards, because the Supreme Court has said that you and I can't haul a credit card issuer before a court in our own state. We have to go to wherever the bank is, and if the bank's in South Dakota, they can play by South Dakota rules.
Oh, we're just I'm at a loss for words. You say that we have two credit limits. Explain that to us.
You know, this is such a game of language. Most people understand what a credit limit is. You get a credit card and it says you have a $3,000 credit limit. But there really is no such thing anymore. If you spent $2,900 on your credit card and you find a sweater for $200 at the mall, more than likely the credit card company will let you buy that sweater. I mean, it used to be that that transaction would be declined, which is what I bet 99% of consumers would expect. And, you know, we've all been there, especially during the holidays, where you, you know, say you don't quite know where you're at, and you say, well, you know, am I at my limit or not? Well, I'll just buy it and see what happens. Well, the credit card companies now let those transactions sail through, and they charge what's called an over-limit fee, because they figured out they were not making any money by denying these transactions. So they'll tell you your limit is $3,000, but they'll let you buy more than that and then charge you this incredibly over-the-top amount for that. There is a limit, of course. They won't let you charge anything.
Mm.
And it might be $400 or $500 more than your actual limit, what I would call your nominal limit. Instead, the actual credit limit is a number that you can't find out. They won't tell you.
If somebody does go over the limit and the bank puts up their credit their rate, what should somebody do?
Well, a lot of these credit card companies, and this really surprised me, I did a survey for the book on hidden fees, where we found out which industries charge the worst hidden fees, and we asked consumers how often they complained about things and how often they got refunds. And much to my surprise, because as you can tell, I don't necessarily have a lot of sympathy for the credit card industry, but the credit card industry was actually the best at giving out refunds to complainers. So it seems to me that the strategy there really is to charge as many fees as they can possibly imagine. But if people call and complain, they don't put up much of a fight. That's actually a pretty good business strategy if you think about it. So the people who are quiet and who don't complain a lot they pay for everybody else, and they pay a lot. Mm. So calling up and negotiating really does work, especially if you've been a good customer for a long time. You know, it doesn't help to call up and yell and scream, but if you call up and, you're ready to go to a plan B if you have to, call up and say, you know, I'm sitting here, I've been a customer with you for 2 years, I've paid on time for 2 years, this is one mistake I've made, and, you know, I'm going to ask for a refund, be very specific, and if they don't give it to you, say, all right, well, close the card, I got another application all filled out right here. And in most cases, when you really show that you mean business, they'll work with you.
Okay. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, because you have some great scripts in the book that are really useful and some sample complaint letters that really work. Talking about banks again, you said that if somebody, let's say they write 3 or 4 checks or use their debit card 3 or 4 times, and when the clearance goes through the bank, the largest amount will clear first, so that instead of maybe getting just one overdraft, you're going to end up with three overdrafts.
Now, this is sure tricky, and it might take a little bit of explaining, but it makes the bank a lot of money. It's called high-low check processing. So let's say you write 4 checks in a single day, and if you add up the checks, there might be 3 small checks and 1 large check. And if the bank processed them in the order they came in and the large check came in last, maybe that last check would bounce your account, so you'd be hit with 1 overdraft fee. Mm. Well, regardless of when the bank receives those checks, they watch, and they run their computers, and they figure out that if they cash that largest check first, and then they cash the smaller checks, then all 4 checks will bounce. And that's what they do. So high-low check processing gets them 4 $39 fees instead of 1 $39 fee. And a lot of folks, including me, think this is pretty unfair.
It seems very unfair, yeah. And another thing that's very unfair, I think, is overdraft protection. I think there's confusion there. In fact, I did get caught myself that way. For 34 cents, I had to pay a $32 fee, and believe me, I did complain, but they would not reverse the fee.
But they wouldn't do it. Yeah, you know, they're holding the line on those. That's called you didn't appreciate that courtesy. That's called courtesy overdraft protection. That's what courtesy has come to nowadays.
You know, I had 3 other cards I could have used, and I would have appreciated using one of them instead.
So was this actually a debit purchase?
It was a debit card, and I got it in. Let's talk about this, because I think this is something a lot of people get confused with. I thought my savings account was linked to my checking account. Mm-hmm. And I knew, like you said, I was getting close to the edge there. I bought several big items that day. And so I thought, well, it's okay. They'll just draw it from my savings account to cover me, you know, thinking maybe I'd pay a $3 transfer fee, which I used to at my credit union. And that didn't happen. It just took the account into the negative, even though there's plenty of money sitting in my savings account. And they charged me $32 for 34 cents overdrawn.
Oh, my Lord. So what, and they had plenty of other money sitting in their bank that was yours. It's
terrible. Yeah.
So, and, you know, I mean, like, we can, first of all, the important thing for consumers to know is that virtually everybody in the country automatically has this courtesy overdraft protection right now. So, like it or not, in a situation that you were in the past, your transaction would have been declined because you would have had not enough money in your account. Now they let the transaction sail through and they charge you this huge fee. Same thing with online bill pay. Same thing with withdrawing money from an ATM. The ATM will not say you don't have that money in your account anymore. It'll give you the money and charge you the fee. So that's the game the banks are playing. So everybody needs to understand that. And what you need to do is call the bank and refuse this courtesy overdraft protection, because it does you no good. You don't want it. So at a bare minimum, just tell them not to do it. And that'll save you from ever encountering these fees in that occasion. But even better is to make sure that you are linked to your savings account or even a credit card, which costs a little money, but it's not nearly as bad as this courtesy overdraft stuff, or even a line of credit, which can cost some money too, but that's better than any of this. The rule of thumb is if you're borrowing your own money, it's cheaper, much cheaper than if you're borrowing the bank's money. But the terms, banks call that other kind of linked account, they use all sorts of terms for it that sound a lot like overdraft protection. So just as you experienced, often you'll think that you're covered when you're not, so you have to be very specific with the bank about it.
Right. On your Red Tape Chronicles, which is excellent, and I recommend our listeners check that out as well as the book, what is the most common complaint that you see coming through, Bob?
Well, there are two. The overdraft protection we just talked about, that really, really gets consumers. But on the whole, most people are more frustrated, I would say, by their cell phone companies than anything else. And it's because the cell phone companies are working so hard to turn our handsets into little cash registers for them. I mean, again, this is a service that often, you know, when you started out, you were paying $35 or $40 a month for. But now there's so many other things that your phone can do, you know, that it's really common that your bill is $100 or $110. But even worse are what I would call the surprise bills, where, you know, you happen to pierce the limit of your minutes, or more common now, your text messages, or something happens to your minute plan. This actually happened to me very recently. And all of a sudden, my $90 bill went to $450, and it was all because I had been accidentally switched, not of my doing, to a new plan that did not include free nights and weekends. So I was making calls all weekend long, and they were costing me $2 a minute, and I found out at the end of the month. And the first reaction that I had, well, I called up, and actually this is another point I'd like for folks to hear up, because I think it really will help a lot. I called on a Sunday when I opened the bill, and my blood pressure exploded. And the first reaction I got from the cell phone company was, no, you asked for this change. There's nothing we can do. And I argued with that woman for about a half an hour, and she would not budge. And this is a $450 cell phone bill. So I was, of course, ready to, you know, to quit the company. Mm. And at one point, she called me back finally and said she would offer me graciously a 10% discount off of this $450 fee, which I wanted no part of. But then I called back on Monday in the middle of the day and started all over with a brand new employee who was 100% reasonable and took care of the problem in 5 minutes, and it all worked out just fine. And I've had this experience recently, a few other cases. It's very important. I think you get much better service if it's at all possible to call during regular business hours. And I know some people just can't do that. But the advantage is, you know, I know folks who work in these telephone jobs have a really hard time of it, but most of the time, you know, you just don't get the best employees late on a Sunday night, or, you know, late on overnight hours with these companies. So if you call during regular business hours, I think you get much better service. And the main goal, of course, is just to be treated like a human being.
Mm. And I think many times that's happened to me too, that you call and you're getting nowhere with one person, and your frustration level just ends up rising and rising. And yet you can call back 5 minutes later and speak to somebody who's perfectly reasonable and wants to help the customer.
Right,
surprise,
right.
Surprise.
There really are people inside every company who know if there's no customers, there's no company, and your goal is just to find those people.
Right, right. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to continue on that vein a little more and look at some of the other industries that specifically apply this hidden fee practice. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Bob Sullivan. His book, Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Across Seattle, humans are vanishing, returning as newborn vampires. With the sun as her enemy, the moon her guiding light, Manali must battle the beast who tortured her. But first, she must face her own demons in Otherworld. Romantic Times magazine calls Gallinoran's best-selling Otherworld series vivid, sexy, and mesmerizing. Darkling by Yasmin Gallinoran, available at bookstores now. For more information, see Gallinoran.com.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit Paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Don't buy into the theory that anxiety and depression are inevitable in today's busy world. Dr. Elisha Goldstein is a clinical psychologist, and he's joining Vicky St. Clair to discuss the psychoeducational teachings of mindfulness and how it can enhance our mental and emotional well-being. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair for mindful solutions, Monday, January 28th at noon. See conversationslive.net for more information.
Everyone loves an attractive, healthy, brilliant smile. From Julia Roberts to Tom Cruise to Halle Berry. Nowadays, a gorgeous, healthy smile isn't just for the rich and famous, you know. Tune in to Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2, and find out how you, too, can achieve, maintain, and tap into the power of a brilliant, healthy smile this holiday season and beyond. Dr. Q's Smile Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 2.
Click the show's page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Bob Sullivan. He's an award-winning journalist. His book is called Gotcha Capitalism: How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. And Bob says, according to his research, that you can save approximately $1,000 a year just by paying more attention to those statements and those mailers that are sent to us by corporations. And I wanted to just read a quote that's at the front of the book. It's from the Connecticut Attorney General, Richard Blumenthal, and he says, "Competing by cheating has become a way of life for many of these corporations, many of the most reputable of them. Because it's done by AT&T, MCI, or Sprint, people are reluctant to use that word. But when all is said and done, these are scams." We're looking at a few of those today and trying to figure out how we can avoid them. And I wanted to just look at, let's talk a bit more about complaining, effective complaining, Bob, because I think, as you said, we're all busy and it's just one more thing we have to do. And sometimes people will swallow that $10 fee or that $15 fee because they don't want to sit on the phone for an hour arguing. Let's look at some really effective ways to complain.
Well, for starters, I think it is a real issue for people that it may not be worth losing a lunch hour for $10. And so everybody has to kind of pick their pain point. And, you know, you better believe that companies have figured this out, too. In fact, the research that I did showed that the average fee is often a little less than $10 because there's something magical about those double digits. And they know people will not really waste an hour over $9.70. And so everyone has to make that choice individually. And I think the most important thing is to pick the industries where you're most likely to get somewhere. And I have a chart for that in the book. We can go over that in a second. But I think even more importantly, you know, pick the really valuable targets because I like to suggest to people that they commit a half an hour a month to doing this kind of house cleaning, and it really is worth it. So pick a target, maybe, you know, one every month, and take a half an hour, you know, lose half a lunch hour, and you'll see how far you can get, and it will actually work. And I think the key is to pick the recurring fees first, even if they seem small. So if it's something that's $4 or $5, but it's every month as opposed to one fee, and you may very well have to spend a whole bunch of time on the phone. But the best example I like to give, because I think it happens to so many people, is with pay television, whether it's cable or satellite. A lot of folks are paying for movie channels that they never watch. Some of them don't even realize that they have them because it was part of a free teaser plan immediately, and then the price went up and they didn't really think about it. Some of those are $10 a month. Now, that might not sound like a lot, but it's $120 in a year. And there aren't many of us who can turn our nose up at a $120 an hour job. So that's an hour well spent if you can get rid of a recurring $10 fee every month. So that's where you should start. And I think once you have, you know, the taste for the blood here of these companies, once you have that success, you'll really start to enjoy it. So, you know, take out a half an hour, half of a lunch hour every month, and pick a target and go after it.
Mm. And another way of, I mean, if you don't get any joy on the phone, I've written so many complaint letters, I could write a book on that. But it is an effective way to get a response, especially if you aim it right to the top.
Yes, yeah. Right to the top is definitely good. A lot of CEOs have essentially crisis management folks who personally handle those letters. So the CEO may not read it, but someone in his or her office will. And they're obviously empowered to solve consumers' problems. You know, it's a great resource. The key is to find the right email addresses for people like that. And it's not always the CEO, by the way. I often recommend that people go a little bit lower than that, say a regional marketing manager or something along those lines. because that person will be high enough to solve your problem, but maybe not so high that they don't have time for individual consumers. Mm-hmm. And if you go online and you start searching for other people who've complained about a company, you will often find people who will, for free, post, hey, I have this problem, and I found this person's phone number or address, and they really helped me. You know, you find the human being inside the company. That's the key, and the Internet is a great resource for that. People do that on my blog, the Red Tape Chronicles, all the time. They also do it on our website called consumerist.com. That's with an IST at the end, consumerist.com. It's a great resource for finding just the right person to complain to, and that'll get you help a lot more quickly than yelling and screaming at a customer service person who might be overseas and really can't help you.
Yeah. And even further than that, if you don't get response, which I didn't when I was dealing with a situation with it was CompuServe, it went on for months and months. I sent it certified mail and required that, or is it registered mail when you require that signature at the end? And I got a response the same day they received it after months and months of doing nothing.
Yeah, registered. Well, see, those things show that you mean business, and I think that's also really important with any company. The truth is they know that most people are fairly passive, frankly, and that most people will not bother to complain, and most people don't know their rights. Most people don't know that if they call their state attorney general's office, someone in the consumer affairs office, probably a lawyer, will actually help them, will actually send out a letter on their behalf, or will actually follow up and maybe even threaten the company. Most folks don't take advantage of the rights that they have, and the truth is when companies encounter a consumer who means business, they often react because they know you can really cause trouble for them.
Mm. And that's really the only way we're going to affect change on a national level, if we are consistent about that complaining and not taking this lying down, right?
Yeah. You know, my friends from Europe often remark to me, you Americans put up with a lot. Right? And, you know, I think about all the airplanes full of passengers sitting on runways for hours at a time. And finally, we're starting to see some people doing some things like videotaping and publishing the results online. And I'm so glad to see that because, you know, we shouldn't put up with this kind of thing. And the only thing to do is to complain. And not just to the company, but I really hope people start complaining to their elected officials because it has not yet, and I'm surprised it hasn't. But none of these things really bubble up as a political issue. When in fact I think that they should. I'm working on a piece right now that will argue that you know this unfair economy and all of this swindling that goes on. I mean, it is the reason for the subprime housing meltdown. I mean, because there was no one minding the store, you know, that actually happened, and that's a consequence of this. And folks saying that's going to send us into a recession. Well, one of the main functions of a government, not just to provide us with a common defense and with roads that work and transportation, but also to maintain a fair market. And we have advocated that. And right now we're seeing some pretty severe results. And I sure hope that some level someone in the federal government will eventually stand up and say, all right, this is also a primary responsibility. And I think that they will be heard loud and clear because consumers are very frustrated by these issues.
Yeah, yeah. And now we know we're not alone. It's not just us.
Well, you know, and not only is it not just you, but one of the tactics that, and this really gets my goat, that companies use all the time is to blame you for this. And we have kind of a natural ability, I think, as Americans, to feel guilty when you overdraw your account by 32 cents. And I'll bet this even happened to you. You feel like, well, it was my fault. Mm-hmm. I did overdraw. And that's sort of the first impulse you have. And boy, when a company sees that little weakness in you, they stomp on it really fast.
Right.
And that's a bunch of nonsense. I mean, of course, if you overdraw your account, you shouldn't have to pay something. But the punishment should fit the crime. And there are companies use the fact that we often feel guilty in these situations to just really extract a pound of flesh from us, and that's wrong.
Right, right. One of the things that I come across a lot because I work a lot online is slow broadband. And I was surprised in there to see that we may not be getting broadband even though we're paying for it.
You know, among the, I collect examples of false advertising because no one else seems to be. You know, we just sort of swallow it now. And no one takes, I guess, any of the numbers they see seriously. But you'll see Internet providers all the time, and I wouldn't single out any provider, they all do it, claiming download and upload rates, which are nothing like what people really experience. And often after you sign up for a service, sometimes after you sign up with a long-term contract with the service, your service will start to degrade. And And, you know, same thing I was just talking about. Often people will say, well, maybe it's my computer. Maybe it's my kid installed software that's slowing my computer down. Maybe it's the pipe to your house, and maybe you're getting cheated out of bandwidth. And it's really a good idea for everyone to check on a regular basis to make sure you're getting the product that you're paying for, because that's sure a hidden fee if you're only getting a half or 25% of the speed that you should be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend a test at a website named speakeasy.net. It's speakeasy, like the old illegal places to get liquor, speakeasy.net. That's a long time ago.
Right.
Not that old.
I can't relate to that anyway. So. must be a cultural thing. But speakeasy.net, we can check our speed there and see if we really are getting the service
getting
that we're
what
paying,
you're paying for. Yeah.
Wow. What other hot buttons there are should we be checking for that just spring to mind right now, the most common things?
Well, we haven't covered retirement, and to tell you the truth, I think that retirement is the most egregious of all of these issues. I mean, if you're worried about $5 or $10 at a time or even $1,000 a year, I mean, that's nothing compared to what's happening to your retirement account. There are hidden fees in everybody's 401k account. That they're so hidden, they're not even called fees. And I explain this in much greater detail in the book, but the very short version is most people are paying between 1% and 2% to support the team of people who manage their mutual funds and, you know, often don't even do a very good job of that. And 1% or 2% might not sound like a lot, but if you're only making 5% a year off your mutual fund, 2% is a heck of a lot. That's, you know, just about half the mm-hmm. profit that you're making. Stretch that out over 30 years, and the average 30-year-old who's saving for retirement right now, and the way we're telling people they should be saving, the average 30-year-old is losing one-third of the money they should have in retirement to hidden fees. They're going to have to work another 4, 5, or 6 years. They have to put off retirement for that long because of hidden fees.
That is shocking. That's really shocking, isn't it?
It's a tremendous amount of money, and there's been studies. The GAO has done a study on this. The Bureau of Labor has done a study on the Labor Department has done a study on this. And nothing has been done to change it yet, but there are things consumers can do right away to fix this. Many folks, now there are folks who actively manage their investments for the retirement, and, you know, they might have a better grasp on what funds are worth paying a little bit of money for, when they're getting their money's worth for the fee and when they're not. But for folks who aren't that active in it, there's no reason for them to be in any mutual fund that charges more than 1%. And so you've got to look up your 401k before you go to bed tonight. Look up it's called an expense ratio. Look up what the expense ratios are in all your funds. And if it's more than 1%, dump it and put your money in whatever the index fund is associated with your 401k account. That'll be a very low-cost fund, and you'll stop bleeding all this money to Wall Street like you are right now.
I'm going to check mine today.
Please do.
Bob, I know you're going to be up here at Third Place Books, and we're running short on time now, so I want to make sure we get that out. And would you let our listeners know when you're coming out?
Oh, you bet. It's a week from Thursday, January 31st. I'll be at Third Place Books at 7 o'clock. I love it up there. It's such a great environment, that bookstore, a little mall there that they have. I'm going to talk about the book, and I'll be signing books, and hopefully we can sit around and have a great session on how to complain.
Sounds good. And what's the one thing that you'd like our listeners to take away with them today if they take nothing else?
Really, it should be to go look at their retirement accounts and make sure that you're not hemorrhaging money and hidden fees in those retirement accounts. That's a really big national problem, and it'll be a while before Congress deals with it, so you're going to have to deal with it yourself right now.
Mm. And your Red Tape Chronicles, you write that twice a week, is that correct?
Every Tuesday and Friday for MSNBC.com, although not tomorrow, it's a holiday today. But every Tuesday and Friday, and you can find it easily just at redtape.msnbc.com.
Well, that's great. Let's say that again. redtape.msnbc.com. And the Red Tape Chronicles are packed full of really good information. You answer actually specific questions there, don't you?
I try to. Everybody's asking these questions, though. I just hope in the end, thanks to the Internet, we find each other and start realizing, as you've mentioned, you know, we're not alone, that this is facing a lot of people and that there's something needs to be done.
Right. Well, I thank you so much for being with us today, Bob. You shared some fantastic information with our listeners.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. Good luck to your listeners at chasing down some of that money.
Yeah, really. And the book, again, is called Gotcha Capitalism, How Hidden Fees Rip You Off Every Day and What You Can Do About It. Bob Sullivan is the author. And don't forget, you can see Bob Sullivan over at Third Place Books at 7 o'clock on the 31st of January. And I want to thank you for joining us today. And you can find me at conversationslive.net, or you can call 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. And thanks for being with us. And please stay tuned to find out what's coming up next Monday at noon. Live well, live strong. And thanks for being with us on this hour.
Don't buy into the theory that anxiety and depression are inevitable in today's busy world. Dr. Elisha Goldstein is a clinical psychologist, and he's joining Vicki St. Clair to discuss the psychoeducational teachings of mindfulness and how it can enhance our mental and emotional well-being. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for Mindful Solutions, Monday, January 28th at noon. See conversationslive.net for more information. Views